Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on the entire internet. We've got a great docket lined up for you today. First, the one-year anniversary when Gannon Stauch went missing. Second, let's talk about the anatomy of a conspiracy case. Third, remember our South Carolina couple from a couple of weeks ago? They need to get a room. Fourth, a law school professor has been suspended because the students didn't like the test question. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day, let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. If you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button, as well as touching that little bell over there in the corner so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. You'll be glad you did. First on the docket, it's the one-year anniversary when Gannon Stauch went missing. That's right, January 27th, yesterday. Letitia Stauch reports Gannon Stauch missing to the El Paso County Sheriff's Office. Needless to say, that has set forth a lot of events. We also know that Letitia Stauch was arrested on March 2nd in South Carolina. That included the charges of first-degree murder. A lot of us should also know that there have been two competency evaluations as regards to Letitia Stauch's mental health issues. And as many of you know, Letitia Stauch has had two competency evaluations, and both doctors have come back and said that Letitia Stauch is competent to proceed to trial. We have a preliminary hearing set next month. Now, also, March 2020, Gannon's remains are found off a roadway in Florida. Ultimately, those are identified to be the remains of Gannon through dental records. And who can forget, new charges are filed against Letitia Stauch as another inmate tells the deputies that Letitia Stauch is trying to escape from jail. Needless to say, this is a tragic story. Anytime a child has their life ended at such a young age, it is a tragedy not only for the family, the victim, but a community. So we'll continue to follow this case. It is obviously going to be an interesting one, and who knows what Letitia Stauch is going to do at any time. Next on the docket, let's talk about the anatomy of a conspiracy case. Now, for those of you who don't tune in all the time, we've talked about this, but let's go over it again very quickly. What is a conspiracy? A conspiracy is an agreement between two or more people to commit an illegal act. It's more than just talking about something. You have to take an affirmative step to go do it. So, hypothetically, if I say we should go rob a bank, I'll go get the mask, I'll go get the car, you go get the bag to put the money in, I'll meet you out back. We have a conspiracy and we have taken that affirmative step to do so. At that point, even if we didn't go rob the bank, we're probably still in a conspiracy, unless somebody says, whoa, I just want to let you all know there's a conspiracy going on here and I am actively withdrawing my participation in that. Rarely ever happens, so withdrawing from the conspiracy, never usually a good defense. Well, as you may recall, we talked about this several months ago. Multiple men were arrested and charged with the plot to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, all right? Not a good thing. You can't go around kidnapping people. You can't go around kidnapping public officials. It's just bad. It goes against our whole theory of government and democracy. Well, needless to say, one of those participants in that plot is a guy by the name of Ty Garbin. Another quick rule as it relates to the law of conspiracy. This is kind of a Reichism, but that's what it is. We've talked about the fact that the threat of imminent incarceration tends to break the bonds of loyalty. Yes, where do we find that most often? In a conspiracy. And why is that important? Because normally the first one in, i.e. the first defendant, to go in, proffer, plea, and agree to cooperate in telling about the conspiracy, i.e. being a witness for the government, joining Team USA, usually gets the best deal. And that's what Ty Garbin is looking to do. Somebody always rolls in a conspiracy. And if you're going to roll, you might as well do it early, get the best disposition, because the bar has then been set. Everyone else that comes in after that, they're going to say, well, that other guy was in here first, and we can't give you a better deal than he did because he was the first to agree to cooperate. So Mr. Garbin is going to plead guilty, or has pled guilty, and he will not be sentenced for a period of time. And the reason being is, that's right, his agreement's going to include cooperation and testifying at trial for the government. Therefore, his sentencing will be put off until after he fulfills that condition of his plea agreement. The government will make sure that Mr. Garbin will remain in custody, but not be near any of his co-defendants, as it could result in bodily harm coming to Mr. Garbin, given the fact that he has agreed to cooperate. That is what is referred to as a snitch jacket when one is in custody. You don't want that jacket, and oftentimes the government has to take great lengths to protect their witnesses in a case, and they actually have, they won't admit it because they don't really exist, but they have prisons that are just people who have testified for the government, and they actually have a high risk of being harmed if they were sent to a prison. So hopefully that explains conspiracy law a little bit, and we were able to use a real life case of Mr. Ty Garbin. Now, why is that significant? We'll talk about the law professor case in just a minute. Now, do you remember the couple that was arrested for engaging in sexual relations on the Ferris wheel in South Carolina? Well, guess what? They face two new charges. Eric Harmon faces two counts of indecent exposure, and Lori Harmon faces another four. They were once again released on bond, this time for $2,500 each. They had already been released on the $18,000 and $14,000 from the case they had just a couple of weeks ago. We talked about that. They were originally arrested when video showed them having sex on the Myrtle Beach Skywheel. Well, guess what has happened now? Now the two have been accused of performing sex acts in a supermarket parking lot and on a bench near a playground. Now, in addition to the sex acts, Lori Harmon is accused of public urination on multiple instances, including in a hotel elevator and on a pair of vending machines back in December. You have to love a couple that is, well, so in love with each other, they just cannot resist themselves. But really, it is going to get rather expensive between attorney's fees, possibly having to register as a sex offender, than just getting a room. So the Harmons, get a room. If you do it again, we may have to send you some money to get a room, but you're going to need more than that because you're both probably going to be in custody since you clearly cannot control your urges. Before we get to the next story, please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, let's talk about a law school professor who's been suspended. All right. He's been suspended because the students didn't like the question on the exam. Let me just give you a little background. Apparently, things have changed a little bit since I went to law school. When I went to law school, you basically had several hundred pages of reading a night. You really didn't have time to do anything else. You had to be prepared because you didn't want to go to class and not be prepared and be told to leave, or you would be publicly shamed and humiliated by the law professor. But one of the things they do in law school is to have you think like a lawyer. And the way that they do that is they give you real factual scenarios in regards to test questions so that you can identify the facts, spot the issue in the case, like what's the rule of law, identify the rule of law, engage in the analysis, and then write a conclusion. Well, a law professor by the name of Jason Kilborn, who teaches at the University of Illinois Chicago Law School, was teaching a civil procedure exam, and the question included an edited reference to racial and gender slurs. Now, this was a hypothetical that one would actually see in regards to a racial employment discrimination case. It would seem like the law professor would want to make the scenario as factually accurate as possible as to something the students would actually see in real life. I assure you, if they were offended by this, they're never going to have a career in criminal defense. So as the story goes on, at one point, the question discusses allegations from a hypothetical employee regarding her treatment at a hypothetical company, saying this employee quit after she attended a meeting in which one of the other managers expressed their angers at plaintiff and called her an N-word and a B-word. Well, the students claim that those words shocked the students, even though they were redacted. It was just the N and then a line and the B and then a line. And they were offended. They demanded that Kilborn, the professor, be removed as chair of the Academic Affairs Committee and from all other committee appointments that he holds. I get it. We should treat all people with dignity and respect. But there are some people in the world that do not. I don't think that this law professor did this other than to give a real life example of what you would see in an employment discrimination case. Seems like that'd be a factual scenario. I could only imagine if there were allegations of some sort of sexual misconduct, how triggered these people would be. Needless to say, the students started a petition and they got 400 signatures demanding that the professor attend mandatory cultural sensitivity training for a mandatory course to be offered by the professor without a history of bias. The professor met with the student organization, and during that conversation, the student group asked the professor when Dickerson had given the attack letter to him, referring to the dean. The professor Kilborn allegedly speculated in jest, "I suspect she's afraid if I saw the horrible thing said about me in that letter that I would become homicidal." Well, can you imagine what came from that? That's right. The student organization then said that the behavioral threat assessment team should be contacted, and Kilborn, the professor, has now been placed on indefinite leave. Now, the irony of it is that the professor has used this factual scenario in this exam, that's right, for over 20 years, and no one has bothered to complain about it. Probably because the students before that actually wanted a real assessment of what it's like to practice law. One thing these students will learn when they get out of law school is you know just enough to be dangerous, and they don't teach you how the rule of law is actually practiced. They have you write briefs as though you're going to the Supreme Court on a daily basis, which rarely happens. You're going to be reviewing discovery, talking to court clerks, asking to get your case moved up the docket as quickly as possible. And I assure you, they're going to be offended by things that people say, and people are going to say offensive things. That's usually what gets them charged, criminal conduct as well. But you also have to remember, there's such a thing called the First Amendment. So these law students, there are some 400 and so that were triggered, you need to reevaluate what you want to do. I don't think the practice of law is going to be in your favor. And I'm not in favor of canceling anybody, but I think that all of these students should be so proud of what they have done that they should put it on all of their resumes when applying for jobs so that their employers know what kind of activist attorney they are going to be hiring at their law firm. Wow. That's all I can really say about that. Wow. Has America gotten soft or what? Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And I have to say, this guy is got to be my personal favorite for the dumb criminal contestant of the week, knowing that there's still one more day that goes on. Well, please take a look at this individual, Edner Flores, right? He walks into a bank in Chicago, a PNC bank to be specific. He walks in politely, waits his turn in line, walks up to the teller and hands her a note demanding $10,000. So far, everything seems to be going pretty well for Mr. Flores until, that's right, the teller then hit the silent alarm and in an effort to stall Mr. Flores, asks him to fill out a withdrawal slip and provide an identification. Well, Mr. Flores, being the responsible citizen that he is and obviously not a very good bank robber, provides his ID, fills out the withdrawal slip, and fills in the number 12345678 9 as his account number. And guess who is standing behind Mr. Flores by the time the clerk processes his withdrawal slip? That's right, the police. Now, Mr. Flores also had a knife in his pocket. It wasn't presented and it wasn't threatened. So, Mr. Flores, although you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day, for giving the bank teller your ID, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day for being a bank robber and not a very good one. And I've said this before, bank robbery is one of the dumbest crimes ever, because even if you get away with it that day, they're going to catch you and you usually don't get that much money. Mr. Flores, congratulations. You are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. Kind of my personal favorite, pulling ahead here. We'll see who shows up tomorrow. And if you are the winner, Mr. Flores, you will receive, at no cost to you, you don't even have to send me a note, I'll just send it to you, a Crime Talk mug. Now, if you would like cool Crime Talk merchandise without having to become a dumb criminal, simply hit the link below. And that's right, it'll take you right to Teespring, where you can order really cool merchandise and it'll be shipped to you within a few days. It's good stuff. It's good quality stuff. It's nice and soft. Did we show you this new one the other night just while I got you here? Look what showed up. Look at that. Just in time for Valentine's Day. Look at that. Don't you love it? Hit the link below. Go to Teespring. You'll be happy you did. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow on Crime Talk.